Money, Riches, and Wealth is sponsored by the Financial Consulate. This is Talk Radio 680 WCBM. It's time now for Money, Riches, and Wealth. Here's your host, Drew Tignanelli.
This is Drew Tignanelli. Here we are with Money, Riches, and Wealth. Christopher J. O'Shea is my co-host tonight.
Andrew Vincente. Good to be with you, sir.
Hey, we have an interesting first half hour we want to talk about. We're going to be talking about cybersecurity because we believe it's a critical issue, and we need to have some wisdom and understanding as to what are the risks of cybersecurity from a financial perspective, from an investor's perspective, and so forth. We're not talking about what kind of stocks to invest in or anything. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about how much of a threat is it, what can be done, and what is being done, and so forth. So who are we going to talk to tonight?
We've got a high executive with Hewlett-Packard. So Frank Mong is with us. He's Vice President of Solutions and Enterprise Security Products, and he's worked for over 20 years in this area. Security intelligence, and he also works with their payment system, data security business. So every day we hear about some retailer having their security stuff being breached and cards information has been thrown out there, and then people think about their credit cards and all that sort of thing. But we're talking about the general exposure to just the whole system that we use. So Frank Mong is with us, and we're glad to have him here.
Yeah. Frank, are you there?
I'm here, Drew Chris. How are you guys?
We're doing great. Hey, Frank. I guess then you're seeing what is happening, obviously, in this. The public is seeing all these breaches of this and that. Why is this all happening? Why can't we seem to be able to stop this?
Yeah. Well, what's happening that I think most folks do not know is that there is an underground marketplace. So think of it as a black market or where adversaries, or the technical term for hackers or bad guys in the cyber world is called adversaries. They have a very sophisticated and well-organized marketplace where they buy and sell either goods such as stolen credit cards or their skills. And so some of these hackers that we call black hats are extremely good at breaking in to retail outfits or financial institutions. With the goal of making money, they can break in and they can sell that information to somebody else that specializes in stealing data. And then they can take that data and sell it in the black market for a lot of money.
Okay, so with that taken, are there strategies that our government and companies like yours can implement that you're going to see that slow down in the future? Or is this something that's going to be, difficult to really rein in?
Yeah, so the problem itself is very complicated. It's been around for many years. Both industry and as well as governments are actively, taking steps to protect themselves and to secure their systems better. The challenge is we're dealing with humans. We're dealing with human beings that highly evolve and organize, and they constantly change their tactics. So what most, I think, companies are doing and governments are doing today, and they're doing this well, is they're really focused on getting the skill set around cybersecurity to be elevated, continue to train people, get them educated, get them to a higher level of capability so that they can do a better job of dealing with or protecting their systems from these hackers in this marketplace. And the other thing that they're doing is developing better processes to react faster, because as these attacks evolve, time becomes very critical. You don't have a whole lot of time until you start to lose a lot of data or lose a lot of private information. So being able to react quickly is also crucial. And once you have the people and process in place, then the technology that we build at HP is focused on enabling them to do those things better.
Now, some people say, Frank, that actual governments around the world, you know, I'm not going to name any governments, but actual governments are actually organizing some of this. Is that true, or is that just a myth?
That's a great, it's an interesting question. I think when you look at the marketplace, the black market or the hacker's marketplace, it's comprised of everything and everything you can imagine. It's actual nation states and governments. It's cyber criminal gangs and it's hacktivists. So it's not, one particular entity that is doing anything more or worse or better. It's the fact that this ecosystem and this process that they use exists that's really helping them with their jobs better. They're just very efficient, very skilled, and they understand how to break into things, and they do a great job of it.
So in other words, so each time when you close a door, they're looking at other doors of getting in, so you're always trying to play catch-up.
Oh, absolutely. This is a classic cat-and-mouse game. Every time we better understand what they're doing, we better understand their tactics, they change and they adapt and they adjust. And they, again, make that, they, again, execute their breach. And then we learn from that and we stop that particular methodology and they change it. So it's because you're dealing with human beings, they adapt and they adjust.
Now, there are people out there that also say we are in an economic cyber warfare. In other words, that it's unlikely that we're going to be launching bombs at each other, but nowadays it's more cyber attacks that happen. Do you agree with that concept that countries are actually using these cyber things to as a warfare method?
I don't know. I'm not an expert on warfare between nations or countries, but I would say if you just look at our lives, our physical lives and our digital lives, many of our listeners here probably use their smartphones quite a bit, more so than they do their computers, and whether it's for engaging in social media or doing some banking online, they're doing their private lives and private work on their mobile device, and that data is valuable to them. And so you can only imagine, if that were to be lost or stolen or corrupted or destroyed, certain things like your pictures and videos of your child's soccer game, that's priceless. So I think there's certain things that we're getting really accustomed to and really used to around the comforts of living in a cyber world along with our physical world, that if that disruption happens, I'm sure some people might find that to be extremely painful. So I'm sure there's an element of risk there.
So are there any, go ahead, I'm sorry.
Well, we got to take a break real quick. You're going to have to save that question for us, okay?
I will.
You want to tell him what your question is, and then I'll go to the break, and he can think about it?
Well, sure. I was just going to ask about people that you deal with, suppliers, vendors sort of thing. Are some better than others?
Yeah, okay. That's a great one. And right now, though, we got to find out what's happening with traffic, which was awful this morning, but this afternoon seems to be pretty good. Maggie, why don't you tell us what's going on, and we'll be right back. Money, Rich, and Wealth. So we're back, Money, Riches, and Wealth. We're with Frank Mung of Hewlett-Packard, Vice President of Solutions, Enterprise Security Products. And Chris loaded a question to him to think about, are there better companies out there than others, Frank, or are they all pretty much the same?
Well, so I was thinking about this and how this could be easily relevant to your listeners, which is, it's hard to say if one company is doing anything better than another. I think all companies try their best to ensure that their interaction with their customers are safe and secure and that their data remains private. I think the problem is this, guys. As users of technology, we all want things to be more convenient, and that convenience factor really pushes the edge of the envelope on the technology innovation and the things that I think the businesses around the world they have to try to do. So one great example is using your mobile phone to do online banking. Sounds super convenient, right? You don't have to go drive to an ATM machine or drive into a bank and ever see anybody from your favorite bank. You can just go on your phone and do this. Now, that's a big problem. And one thing that we did earlier this year is we ran a study on applications on mobile apps on smartphones. And we went to an app store and we downloaded about 2,500 different applications on a smartphone. And these apps are all, think of them as business-to-consumer apps. So these are your banking apps, your insurance apps, you name it. And what we found was this, 97% of those apps are all vulnerable. There's something that
wasn't
done quite right that made it sort of dangerous for you to use as a consumer. And so this is not a particular vendor or a particular company. Mm-hmm. It's all of them. And the problem is, you know, they're doing their best to try to make it convenient for you to interact with them using your smartphone or smart device. And as a result of that, the speed to market, the time to market to get to you is causing problems when it comes to coding securely and building better secure apps. And so I think that's more of the problem than anything else.
So you kind of answered one of the questions I wanted to ask you was, are there things that we can do as a government and as security people like yourself to make the internet and online access and all that kind of stuff a lot safer, but it will come with freedom restrictions and people won't like that?
Yeah, you know, it's been a problem since the beginning of the internet. I don't think that's ever changed. I think ultimately it's a question of convenience versus, you know, rules and regulation. I think there's certain things we can do as users of the technology. So going back to that banking app, you know, I would say, you know, talk to your bank and make sure that the application you're going to use is safe on the particular smartphone you're using.
Yeah,
and if it's not safe or you're not satisfied with the answer, don't use it. Just don't use that app. Drive over to the ATM or drive to the bank and do your transactions there. I think being smart about how you handle your own password, your user login, is very important. You know, when you get an email that says, "Hey, you know, we're tech support for your favorite bank, and I need you to give me your social security number, your username, and your password." Before you give it to them, let's think about this. Does this make any sense? Pick up the phone and call the bank. So there's a couple of steps we can take to really prevent a lot of, you know, bad or tragic things from happening.
Now, you know, you're a cybersecurity person, and you sound like you've studied the industry quite long and so forth. And I would assume that you've done fairly well and that you're an investor yourself. Do you concern that the financial markets could be at risk to cyber attacks?
You know, I'm not concerned. I'm sure it's happening. You know, I think the cyber market, you know, financial markets are under attack. I think a lot of large global entities are targets constantly. I think most of the time it's just not on the news because they're doing a good job of blocking them. So that's not something I'm necessarily worried about. I think a lot of the large institutions out there, including our financial markets, are doing a great job of protecting themselves. They're doing the best that they can with the skill sets and the people that they have and the processes they have and the technologies they have. They're doing what they can. You know, I think an area that we all should focus on and stress for is just better education, better cyber education. Let's get a younger workforce out there that's capable of working for the good guys, you know, working for us, and, you know, with a bright future versus, you know, turning to the dark side.
Now, what about the electrical grid? You hear a lot about that. Is that something that is vulnerable, that they haven't taken the time and so forth to really update? Is that anything anyone should be concerned about?
Yeah, well, the good news right now is most of the critical infrastructure, such as power plants and power generation companies, they're highly mechanical, right? These are big reclosers, large nuclear power plants. Everything's mechanical. So if you want to go do something, you got to physically get in there and go physically flip a switch or use a piece of machinery to turn a knob. Like, we're talking pretty hardcore here. Now, the world is moving to the internet, so you've got this thing called the Internet of Things, where everything's going to talk to the cloud or to the internet, and everything's going to have an IP address, and it gets all very technical very quickly. But imagine the whole world on some kind of cyber cloud, right, including these large machines that generate power. That could be concerning. That could be a problem. And, you know, that's something that NIST is actively looking at, that, you know, HP is actively looking at with our customers. And, you know, there are ways to protect yourself. There's I think, really good practices that's already employed today based on the physical nature of our current critical infrastructure that we can use in the virtual world as well.
So how much, just to get a feel for, you know, after 9/11 and the United States had to just increase security, the cost of all that isn't necessarily productive. It's protective, but it's kind of a drag on the economy.
Frank likes it.
What kind of, sure. What kind of money does a company like HP spend on securing their internet traffic?
Or your clients.
And your clients, sure.
We're talking multi-hundreds of millions or multi-hundreds of billions or what?
Yeah, I can't even guess. Sure. I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. But I think cost, you know, there's several ways of looking at that. Sure, there's a cost to put in the technology, hire the right people, develop the processes. There's certainly cost to that. But I don't think that cost is any different from the ability to run a business and run it well. And that's just simple cost that you've got to absorb in today's modern world. In our new style of IT, that's what you've got to do. I don't think there's a choice to it.
No.
What I think we got to ask ourselves is this. Like, if you don't do some of these things well and you ignore certain things, what's the cost of that? You know, with a recent retail breach, the cost wasn't necessarily just monetary. Sure, lots of people lost credit cards and it cost a lot of money, but the CEO lost their job. You know, so there's multiple factors to that. So the question becomes, you know, what is the risk you're willing to take? How much risk can you absorb? And if you were to monetize that risk, is it just a dollar value or is it really, at the end of the day, your job? You know, so there's a lot to it.
Yeah. So, and you know, you're right, because not only did Target have some issues, you know, and so forth, but the whole company has really lost a tremendous amount of business because of that breach. They're just people that won't go back there now.
I was going to say, yeah, besides the dollar, hard dollar cost of that time, you've got just bet, you know, the lack of goodwill, the opposite.
Yeah. So, Frank, you know, one of the reasons we wanted to talk to you is because, you know, you get all these things that are thrown at you about cybersecurity and the risk and people saying this and that. And Warren Buffett once said, you know, you have to assess risk as an investor. And an asteroid hitting the Earth is a risk you have to assess, but it's a 0.01% maybe. Well, you know, you keep hearing all these articles about cybersecurity, and we wanted to hear firsthand from somebody who's on the front line of this to say, you know, it's a risk that you have to be keeping in mind, but, you know, this is the percentage, or, you know, this is the general idea of what's going on out there.
Yeah, so I think the risk is real. It's there. Today, a personal credit card in the black market's worth between $10 and $12. So there's
really
monetary value
all?
In someone. Sorry?
I say, is that all? $10 or $12? But I guess if you steal $1 million, I'm pretty good money.
Right. That's right, right. So $10 times $1 million becomes a decent amount of change. So there's value associated to that, and that's motivation for someone to try to do this or for an organized group to try to attack and get that information. Likewise, healthcare records are worth more than credit cards. So, you know, there's demand. I mean, there's motivation. And so the threat is real. I think, you know, as an industry and government, they've put process in place to help mitigate some of that risk to you and I. Like, let's talk about the common person, right? We've got a credit card. If we were to get our credit card stolen, the number stolen, what's helping us mitigate our risk when there's insurance on that? So we may not be accountable for that money. So someone decides to steal your credit card, use it to buy a nice purse for $1,000. Do you have to pay that bill? The answer is no, right? You can show that it was stolen. You know, the insurance company is going to cover that. So there are some things to account for that risk. And I think that's part of what you and I as users need to look at and need to consider for our lives. And, you know, I think the only tricky part is as we start to use more and more, you know, mobile phone, smartphone technology, or Internet of Things type of things where our thermostat is talking to somebody and our refrigerator is doing the shopping for groceries. What does that mean at the end of the day? You know, are we willing to take on the conveniences of the technology that offers us, but at the same time lose more, you know, privacy? You know, I think that's the question that each individual needs to ask, and that's the risk that they have to assess.
Do you have, you know, we've only got about a minute left. Do you have two or three things you would suggest to our listeners to do to just make their own personal situation more secure?
Yeah, you know, I would say, look, it's understand what you're getting yourself into. There is certainly conveniences to technology. I'm a big proponent of that. I'm in the tech world. But you got to understand whether or not that convenience is worth the risk. You mentioned, you know, mobile applications. You got to be really careful. It doesn't matter what kind of mobile phone you have. It's probably not secure, and that mobile phone now is connected to everything, from the cell phone sites to hotel Wi-Fi access points to the coffee shop. So you got to understand, you're connected to a public place, and so you got to be aware of what applications you're using, how you're using them. Does it, you know, does the convenience outweigh the risk you put yourself in? I think from a digital world perspective, today is all about your phone, your smartphone. And being careful about that is very important. And the other thing is just, you know, look at emails. Everyone still gets emails. Don't respond to emails that just doesn't seem right or too good to be true. If it's too good to be true, it is, you know, and just follow your gut on that.
Yeah, they're getting tricky. I mean, I get some emails sometimes that I look at and I actually think this is real, and I just have to pause and sit back and look at it and figure out what's going on here, and then realize this yep. is dangerous, you know? So they're getting
That's right.
really good at fishing, aren't they?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, Frank, you know, a good friend of mine who I believe you worked for actually told me you're one of the best in the industry. So we were really excited to get you to come on and speak about this, and we appreciate your time. I know it's valuable.
Very much so.
So we really appreciate you being with us.
Thank you, guys, and thank you, Baltimore.
All right. Take care. Anyway, we're Money, Riches, and Wealth. We're going to Maggie Hunter in traffic. Take it away, Maggie.
Yeah, who exactly we had?
I can't believe you never found the cybersecurity song there, Noah. Oh, there you go. Good comeback, Noah. Anyway, we are here, Money, Riches, and Wealth. We were talking with Frank Mung from HP Security for the first half hour of the show. He had to leave, so we're just going to an open show for the second half hour of the show.
Do we have open lines, Drew?
We do, actually. 410-922-6680. If you want to get in, there's only, again, a half hour of time. And if you do want to get in and ask a question about something or just make a comment about our last discussion, that'd be fine. But while we're waiting, I brought this with me, Chris. I didn't even think about it that it was Frank Mung. I just brought it in as my Drew's View. As scam phone calls continue, IRS identifies 5 easy ways to spot suspicious calls. So what's going on and why the IRS is alerting preparers, tax preparers, to tell their clients, their customers, that this is happening and do not fall for it, okay? So what's happening is you've got these individuals, these criminal element out there who call people up and say, I'm with the IRS, you owe money, I want it paid immediately, this is what's happening, and they pretend to be with the IRS. They say, you need to, if you don't, we're going to begin confiscating your things, we're going to be sending police to your house, et cetera, et cetera. They try to intimidate people. And
everybody knows probably at least one person who's read a story about how the IRS has, in fact, confiscated assets of
but that's not how the IRS
owners.
Works.
No, I understand that, but right away
they think,
wait a minute, I've heard that happening to people we know,
and I want that happening to me. You know, I don't want I don't want the police, and so forth. And they ask for credit cards, and they ask for credit card information. And, you know, they want all kinds of, you got to do it on a prepaid card and all kinds of stuff. The IRS doesn't call people. They don't call people and harass them. They don't send it. You know, what they do is they send a notice out, and then they send another notice out, and then they send, or sometimes they set up an appointment where they're going to do an audit, and they do it at your place of business, and they have to have IRS. I've done this before. I've worked with people. And anytime anybody's pressuring you to get money and so forth, you can be assured it is not the IRS, because that's not how they get the money. What they do is they go to your financial institution. They say, hey, I am the IRS. I've proven it to you, PNC Bank. Mm-hmm. And Chris O'Shea has a bank account here, and I'm confiscating that to pay the taxes that he owes us. Right. That's how they take money. They don't do it over the phone and ask you for a credit card and so forth.
We know, and they don't do it the way they used to do it.
Yeah.
You remember that when our friend, our accountant friend, told us about the people in Chicago who was an old elderly couple, and the IRS agent says, you know, got to talking with them, and what kind of car do you drive? And let me see the keys. And so before the meeting ended, he said, well, thank you. I've confiscated the keys to your car. You have to find another way to get home because we're using that to pay off the overdue taxes that you
right.
owe.
But they aren't allowed to do that
anymore. They were big people.
That was
the kinder, gentler
the taxpayer bill of rights in the 1980s.
Before, well, it was in the early 90s, and then the kinder, gentler IRS came out, and then the taxpayer bill of rights, and so, yeah. The good
anyway,
old days.
We're going to Tom in North Baltimore. Tom, how can we help you?
Hi, I have just three quick questions for you, if I might.
Yeah, go ahead.
The first is, what is an annuity? The second is, what is indexing? And the third is, to what extent do you and your team use either of those in your practice?
Okay, so an annuity is a life insurance product where you put money into it and it grows tax-deferred, okay? And so that's the gist of the vehicle. So even though it's a life insurance product, it's designed to be a financial deposit that the money will grow tax deferred. Now, when they use the word indexing, they mean that you don't get a guaranteed interest. You get an interest rate based on the a stock market index or a group of stocks. There are all kinds of ways they come up with these indexes. And whatever that index does, based on the formula they're using, will determine what rate of return you're going to get. All right. So with that said, you say, well, what's wrong with them or what's good about them? You know, personally, we have access to those vehicles, but we are fee-only financial advisors, and we only buy for our clients what we believe is in their best interest. And we find that annuities typically are best suited in the commission world, where somebody sells the product to somebody and makes a commission. But when you look at it from our perspective as just what's the best thing for our client, we don't find it to be as good an investment as you could possibly make. Why? Because typically these products come with large fees that the insurance company, the insurance agent, and so forth are going to make in selling these products and so forth, and they tend to distort the rate of return you're going to get on the investment as opposed to create the best investment opportunity. Now, does that mean they're totally bad? No, I'm not saying that. It's just you have to understand the fullness of them before you get involved in them. I don't think somebody will make a horrible mistake to buy one. I just don't necessarily believe it's absolutely the best thing you could buy.
That's tremendously helpful. I really appreciate that information.
All right, Tom. Thank you.
Thank you.
Goodbye. 6:43. We're going to George in Pikesville. George, how can we help you?
Yes, how are you doing tonight? Enjoy your program.
Well, thank you, sir. What can we do for you?
I want you to give me a down and a real quick assessment. I've got a $15,000 portfolio invested in an annuity, not an annuity, but I'm not getting the information right. It's an investment that is held by one carrier.
Right.
And that's the entire portfolio that I have, and I'm retired.
Well, what does it do? What is it invested in? How does it give you a rate of return and so forth?
Do you get income from it?
Yes, it does. It gives quarterly adjustments.
Okay.
I've held it long term. I was originally a beneficiary.
Okay.
And I survived my wife.
Okay.
It was her investment.
Can you tell me the name of the company?
Yes. It's a very common name. It skips my... I just can't give it to you at the moment because...
Is it a bank?
No, it's a mutual fund.
Mutual fund.
Oh, okay. Mutual fund. Well, yeah. You know, George, it all depends on what kind of mutual fund it is. I mean, have you found that it's been doing a good job for you?
Yes. Fidelity is the name of the company.
Okay. Oh, okay. Which mutual fund with Fidelity, though?
It's a mixed bag.
Okay. It's like the Fidelity Freedom 2010 or 2015 or something?
I've got some. It's a mixed bag, some of that, some of others that are in the same genre.
Okay. You know, if you've been finding over the last some years that you've owned this, that it's continued to do what you want and it doesn't cause alarms and so forth to you, you know, Fidelity is one of the better mutual fund groups out there. I don't see anything negative about it, not knowing your funds, of course, but they will go up and down, though, with the stock market and the bond market. You just have to be aware of that.
That's my concern, that we've seen the best of what we can at this point, and that there may soon be a crash, and then where would we be left?
Well, you went through one in 2008, I'm going to assume. And did you, if you're just living off of the little bit of distributions it's doing quarterly, I don't know that it would be a horrible thing if the price goes up and down. Right?
What about the fact that if this goes south, that all the gains I've had since about 10 years ago would be wiped out?
Well, they were wiped out in 2008, so that didn't overwhelm you too much back then, did it?
And it came back after a few years.
Financial condition has changed since then.
Yeah. If you don't have anything else and this is it, maybe you do need to consider, how do I put this in a much more secure place?
How about going to cash?
Well, you can, but just make sure that if you do, you got to understand if you're going to have to pay any gains on the sale of the funds so that you're not surprised in April. I'm not telling you shouldn't go take the gains. I'm just saying I don't want you to be surprised in April if somebody says to you, hey, George, you owe $1,000 in taxes or something like that.
Right. Well, I'd like to be able to have that 1099 as a backup so that that really happens.
Yeah, well,
sooner see the gain at this point and pay the tax.
Well, then you should. Then I think that's a fantastic strategy for you. I think you ought to do it. If that's what you're thinking about and that's going to make you feel good and this is the only 15 you have, I would definitely do it, sir.
I appreciate that.
All right, George.
Thank you very much.
Take care. That's a good question, because, he's concerned. He
sure.
should just
well,
take
again,
it.
Well, again, as we say, you got to lessen the worrying burden of money management.
Absolutely.
So if it's keeping you up at night,
do it. Anyway, we got to go to Mark Thibodeau, find out what's happening with weather, and we'll be right back, Money, Riches, and Wealth.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
And we're back, Money, Riches, and Wealth. We've only got about 6 minutes left. We're going to our last two callers of the night, JT and Glenn Burney. How can we help you, JT?
Good afternoon, or good evening, gentlemen.
Yes.
What I'm going to ask you is a very legitimate and I'm serious question.
All right.
I would like to buy some land, let's say 100,000 acres. The only problem with this, is there a way that I could buy 100,000 acres of land on Mars for my grandkids' children? Because I was sitting here thinking, everything on Earth is like, is there a way to buy land on one of the planets?
Not that I know of at this moment in time. Yeah, but it's an interesting concept.
Well, because who knows 25, 30 years from now, they may find gold, oil, or whatever if I could buy that 100,000 acres. And
right.
that would be something nice for my grandchildren.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying, but unfortunately at this point in time, deeds for Mars and the moon are not available at this moment.
I mean, Japan's going to build elevators, right?
Are they? That's cool.
They're going to build this transportation system they're talking about into space.
Really?
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah.
All right, JT. Good call. Good question.
All right,
man. I understand what he's saying.
Sure.
He is.
Yeah.
Very forward thinker. Gary in Park Heights, how can we help you?
Well, it's called Another Day, Another Dollar. You had two calls that I want to talk about for a moment.
Okay.
I only have 4 minutes now. 3 minutes.
But the gentleman that's retired that called, worried about his money, tell him to withdraw it like the mafia and put it in the safe deposit box and pay $30 a year, and no one will bother him. Number two...
Well, that's good advice. Go ahead.
The gentleman from the cyber, whatever, I have no computer.
Well,
I'm 84 years young, but I have...
The world's better off that way.
I have a phone at home with answering service. I have a cell phone, which I'm on now, walking a mall here at Northwestern High School. I have the U.S. government for mail. Why should I have a computer and get one where, oh, gosh, this guy's got millions. We're going to milk his bank account. Then you got companies, lock them up or whatever you call it.
Can I ask you a quick question, Gary?
Yeah, go ahead.
Do you worry about these things often?
Yes.
Well, you know, are you a happy guy?
I'm very, very happy.
Okay.
For two reasons. I wake up every day, I take care of myself, and I don't worry about the next-door neighbor, but I show love, not make love to my neighbor.
Okay. So you find a solution for yourself, and that's great. And
everybody.
Yeah, but, you know, your solution doesn't necessarily work for everyone, does it?
Works for me, boy.
Why? And I admire that, you know? And I'm glad that it's working for you, and you are finding joy in it, too.
Well, I enjoy every day, every minute.
Well, that's great.
You only get a few minutes on your show. I'm wondering why, if you pay for your show with all those commercials during your time, you should get a piece of it.
Yeah, well, you know, I could if I wanted to, but I don't. I don't do that because we don't want to have any conflicts of interest between what we talk about and so forth.
That's what they do about the dollar. Okay, be good and God bless.
All right, buddy.
All right.
Thanks.
Good night, Gary.
Gary, you know, he's got himself a solution, and it works. It works for him, and I think that's great.
Sure.
Anyway, we got about a minute left. You know, you were going to say, we got 1 minute, so
gotcha.
I'm just warning you. Why don't you, 1.5 minute, Noah.
Can they hear Noah when he...
No.
Okay.
No, fortunately, right. They can't hear him. Right. It's unfortunate we can, but...
He's not in our imagination, right? I see him, but when he speaks, that's not my imagination. All right, go ahead. What was your topic?
So tell the listeners a couple of our clients who have had issues, and we've helped to save them from some of those things.
Well... You mean we have one client
we just picked up that almost had his whole accounts wiped out, right?
Sure.
Because of his
he answered something to an email, and they stole. They specifically.
He wasn't working with us at the time.
No, he wasn't working with us. Not only did they get into his brokerage account, but they also diverted his Social Security check for 6 months.
For 6 months, right.
And since he didn't do. Oh, he's got money's coming in from a lot of different places. And he didn't notice it for 6 months. So, and we hear on a regular basis people's Social Security numbers have been compromised. People need to be careful.
Yeah.
They're not alarmists, but you just need to be careful. So if 97% of mobile phone apps are unsecure, that's something you ought to consider.
Yeah, I never thought. But, you know, now that he said it, I'm probably going to be less apt to use one. Sure. Less apt to use one. Anyway, what was I going to say? Oh, yeah, we did an alert on this about the IRS and so forth. About 3 weeks later, a client called us up and said, you know, I had a call just like that. But thanks to you guys telling me about that,
right.
I saw that video. I told those guys, you know, and I just hung right up on them, you know. So, you know, that's why we do this. We want to alert people that these scams are out there. Don't, if like Frank said, if you see an email that sounds too good to be true, don't answer it.
Because they can use like, even social media to find out some specifics. They can use the right names.
And don't
with the ones we heard about with somebody's being ill,
yep,
right?
Right.
And this family member, you got to send cash.
Yeah, they use obituaries sometimes. Anyway, this is Drew Tignanelli saying God bless.
Yeah.
Radio 680.